Petrangelo shoots, save, rebound, score! Nicholas Waugh ties it! Rebound goal for Nick Waugh.
Live from the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com.
A steal for Colasar, charging out. Colasar, the righty, shoots and scores! Colasar on the breakaway.
This is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, your home for access with the team, exclusive player interviews, and breaking news from around the National Hockey League. Here are your hosts, Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Welcome in, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Las Vegas. Ryan Wallace, Darren Millard, Chris Chapman, live inside the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studios. Findlay Chevrolet on the 215, home of the...
Some big news out of the gate as it dropped earlier this afternoon. The Vegas Golden Knights have extended Noah Hanifin to the max 8-year contract. He will be around the Las Vegas Valley for a while now, coming off the deadline acquisition from the Calgary Flames. We'll get into what happened last night in Edmonton at the end of that 8-game road trip. If you're wondering, it was an 8-game road trip. It was 8 games in 8 different cities, including one in Vegas right in the middle. We'll also chat with John Shannon, who will stop by, our NHL insider, and just give us a lay of the land and what's happening in the Eastern Conference, as well as the perception of the playoff positioning that's taking place in the West. But we start off with the information filtering out this afternoon through VGK Twitter. If you don't follow VGK Twitter, that's where the news broke today that Noah Hanifin had been extended to 8 years at a cap hit of just over $7 million per year. A great trade for a rental when it happened. Mm-hmm. And now it is one of the best deals at the deadline, and it challenges the likes of Tomas Hertl, who nobody knew was available.
Yeah, you're right on the money. I mean, you've got 6 years of Tomas Hertl, and now you've got 8 years of Noah Hanifin beyond just this season. $7.35 million AAV, that number is a steal for the value that Hanifin's going to be able to provide. He's been a seamless fit for the Vegas Golden Knights since the trade to bring him home, to bring him here to Vegas. And I'm excited because I didn't expect that deal 8 years would be below $7.5 million AAV. It's just a great number to lock up Noah Hanifin.
Just to give you an indication of what kind of deal we're talking about. Now, he's an elite defenseman. He is capable of doing everything on your hockey club, from running your power play to killing penalties, and is just such a fluid skater. He can expected to become the franchise defenseman as he grows along. But next year, when this contract kicks in, according to Cap Friendly, Noah Hanifin will be the 29th highest paid defenseman in the National Hockey League. 29th. Off of an 8-year contract extension. It's a really friendly deal for the team. It's a great deal for Noah Hanifin, obviously, for a contract that's pushing $60 million. Nobody's going to blink at that. But some marvelous work from the pro scouts who identified this deal, to Kelly McCrimmon, who made the swap happen with the Calgary Flames, and then subsequently working with the player and the agent and getting this extension done, where the preference when he was acquired and all the rhetoric leading up to the trade deadline was Noah Hanifin had a preference to go to the East Coast, somewhere that was close to his home in Boston. That is now put on the back burner, and he is now a Vegas Golden Knight for the next 8 years.
Yeah, and you know, I think that that's kind of a twofold thing, right? Obviously, the Golden Knights on the ice are a team that is inside of a window to win, and to win now, last night's game notwithstanding. This is a team that won last year, defending Stanley Cup champions. The expectation is they want to win as many championships as they can, so that appeals to a player the likes of Noah Hanifin because he wants to win too. But then you get the appeal of Vegas. You get the beautiful weather. You get the great facilities. You get the commitment to winning in every single facet. And I think that, you know, for the Golden Knights, you can bring players in and they will fall in love with everything that comes along with being a Vegas Golden Knight. And then it can lead to extensions like this, where the rhetoric leading up to it, as you mentioned, Darren, was Noah Hanifin wants to go back east. Now he's a Vegas Golden Knight for the next 8 years.
And you look at what they've been able to do over the years and just expose players to this city, this environment, this franchise, and the competitive nature of this organization. And they swung for the fences. They got Mark Stone, acquired him, and then were able to ink the long-term extension. Alex Pietrangelo comes over via free agency, and he signs for the max. Jack Eichel is acquired, and Jack Eichel is a player that that is a part of this team's long-term future. Tomas Hertl has 6 years left on his deal following the trade from the San Jose Sharks, and Noah Hanifin. That's a pretty impressive group of players who have long-term status with their contracts at a high-end ability. So home run for the Vegas Golden Knights. Now, Eichel, Pietrangelo, and Stone all won Stanley Cups. Hertl and Hanifin will be hoping to join that group in the next couple of years with the Vegas Golden Knights. Hanifin is he's a free agent at the earliest possible that he could be a free agent now before this signing. He could have gone to unrestricted free agency at 27 because he broke into the National Hockey League out of that remarkable 2015 draft. Everybody wants that opportunity, and not everybody is granted because of skill and because of where you're drafted, and then the way the contracts work out. Maybe you go the team buys a couple of years of free agency. It all aligned for Noah Hanifin to go to unrestricted free agency at the height of his career, and he passed that up to sign with the Vegas Golden Knights for $7.3 million per year for 8 years. And he's a 27-year-old who has fit in seamlessly with Vegas this year. He's played 16 games with the Golden Knights and scored a couple of goals, has 9 points. And during his time with Vegas, he has a +7 rating, 2 goals, and an average ice time of over 23 minutes. That ranks first among the team's blue line core. This is the blue line core that has Pietrangelo, has Theodore. Hague's been great. Like this is a blue line with McNabb and Martinez and White Cloud, an established Stanley Cup winning blue line. And Hanifin's come in and been the most productive and the most leaned on. Now, Pietrangelo has been hurt. That's part of that equation in that. And other players have been in and out of the lineup. But Hanifin has become, in a short time here, a not just top four, but a pivotal part of that blue line in every single situation for Bruce Cassidy.
Yeah, he's a key piece, right? Like, and it's pretty wild to say that after 16 games of a player, but with what he's been able to do over the course of those 16 games, you mentioned the point totals, 9 points and a +7, but we're talking about 2 power play goals as well. And for the Golden Knights, I think that when you start to look at the value that Noah Hanifin can bring to the table, there's a willingness to kind of simplify things on the power play that we've talked about as a need for this team. And that's another aspect beyond what he does defensively, beyond what he does in every other facet. You mentioned quarterbacking a power play. He can absolutely do that too. And with Pietrangelo out, I think that you're seeing Noah Hanifin kind of come in and show you who he is, right? He's a guy that's taking ownership of this opportunity, and he's come in and been everything the Golden Knights could have asked him to be, and was a big reason why this team was able to go on a run and kind of put themselves in a really good spot to make the playoffs and get themselves back into the dance.
Just look at where Hanifin started with Vegas and who was he paired with when he first came in.
Pietrangelo.
And Pietrangelo went out, returned, and they were able to put him back with his regular D partner in Alec Martinez, and Nick Hague slid up. So you balanced things off a whole bunch more. Mm-hmm. You became deeper through that, and you had these incredible. You had Hanifin on one pair, Theodore on another, Petrangelo on another pair. That's a luxury that just nobody else in the National Hockey League. This was already thought to be the deepest defense corps in the NHL. You had a high end player like that. It takes it up a couple of big notches on that ladder when you're sizing up and evaluating blue line corps in the NHL. And he's a key piece right now. He becomes the alpha in a couple of years. Like they share that role right now, but with 8 years and at the perfect, and it is the perfect age, the youngest that you can be, an unrestricted free agency, Hanifin hit that. So you sign that 8-year deal. It's the best. And we hear all the time, we had to give 8 years, but we're not. Lou Lamoriello had the best line. We don't like the age that the player is going to be at the end of it, but we had to do it. This is the perfect scenario for Noah Hanifin if you're going to hand out an 8-year deal for a player that's hitting unrestricted free agency at 27. We'll always see deals for players that are older, and I like a lot of those deals, but nothing gets better than a 27-year-old signing that extension.
Yeah, not to mention the fact that, you know, from a percentage of the cap, by the time this deal is over, Noah Hanifin's value is going to, I believe, be higher than the $7.35 million cap hit. And you're also not going to have as much of the percentage of the cap committed because we expect the salary cap to continue to go up over the next eight seasons. So not only is it a good deal now, I think it's going to age incredibly well and you know, might provide even more value at the tail end of it with all of those factors factored in.
Ryan, cap friendly, 29th highest paid defenseman next year.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's some expiring deals that will come off the books in the next couple of years that are high-end contracts. But 29th when it starts, it's going to get even more economically friendly for the team. And when you start moving players around and wanting to bring other players in to add to it, it becomes that much more valuable and advantageous to the team, and what Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee and the entire hockey operations department were able to accomplish with this deal.
Yeah, I mean, you start to look at the value that you might have in 2 or 3 years where you have Noah Hanifin at this number and you have more flexibility with your cap to continue to build a roster that's deep and can contend. I didn't expect that it would be 8 by 7.35. That number's phenomenal from Kelly McCrimmon, and it's just another one of the masterclasses that this front office has put forth in the National Hockey League. You go out there, you acquire a player that you believe can help you, you let that player fall in love with Vegas, and then you get them at a great number that sets you up with cost effectiveness over the life of the deal, and it gives you flexibility. It's just great, great stuff.
Good deal as a rental. Slam dunk. Grand slam now with the extension. And we heard at the time of the trade that there was an extension in play, and that kind of, I think it was over valued, that report. I don't know how far along any of these conversations were, but it didn't happen immediately. And then when there was a couple of weeks went on after Noah's arrival in Vegas, you wondered whether it would go to the off season before they were able to decide whether Hanifin was going to sign the extension or whether he would go to free agency. What basically has happened here is, one, the dollars always have to make sense for the player, and the dollars always have to compute with the organization. But you also had a player that was able to observe and be around the organization and on a day-to-day basis from the facility, from the coaching staff, from the support staff with the medical and the equipment staff, you're able to sell him on an organization and that extension as he goes through the negotiation. And I think that played a role. And don't underestimate Jack Eichel in this. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of guys from the Boston area, and there's a big rivalry happening today, working towards a potential championship game in NCAA men's hockey. But one's BU and one's BC, and they've come together, and they're tight. And I think that Eichel's presence here, maybe not from like in the inner workings of the contract. I think Noah Hanifin is independent enough to make his own decisions there. But having that presence of Jack Eichel and being able to hear what Jack says about this city and about the organization carries a lot of weight.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, anytime you know somebody that's been here for a couple of years that knows the ins and outs of what it's like to live and play here in Vegas, I think that, you know, that opinion obviously carries some weight. And, you know, again, as much as you look at it from that perspective, that, you know, there's a comfort level with Jack Eichel being on the team and you know, recognizing that aspect of it, there's also the comfort level of settling in for a couple of weeks of seeing what your everyday life is going to be like. And, you know, again, from an organizational standpoint, I think that the Golden Knights treat their players, they treat everyone on staff and in the organization top notch, and you get to experience that for a little while and what it's like to live and play here. It's a no-brainer.
Okay, what's your evaluation of Noah Hanifin as a hockey player? Leaving the contract extension on the side, that obviously means a lot, but let's get back to on the ice and your impressions of Hanifin and his first 16 games.
Yeah, I mean, I think Noah Hanifin, in a similar ways to Alex Pietrangelo, just kind of does everything well, right? Like, obviously, there's offensive upside in his game. I like his ability to kind of be active at the offensive blue line, to kind of open up lanes, gets pucks to the front of the net. There's a simplicity to his game there that I really like. Obviously, his skating stands out. He's a great skater. He's able to kind of, you know, make plays, and if he misses on a play, he's able to get himself back into a position where he can kill a play. I think there's a nice little physicality to his game as well. Certainly in tight around the goal, I think Hanifin is noticeable in that regard. I just think he does everything really well. He defends really well. He's able to make great passes to kind of break out of the zone, and I like his instincts offensively.
I wrote down some words this afternoon as I was thinking about Noah Hanifin's skill set. Aggressive. And what I mean by that is he can come over and handle and almost like give Nick Hague an added support on when defending a rush. He's aggressive in the offensive zone. He's got that makeup to think beyond just the standard play. He elevates it. He's fun. I love his attitude. Loose. Smooth is another word that just goes perfectly with Noah Hanifin. Smart, skilled, and athletic. Those are the words that I put surrounding Noah Hanifin's skill set as a hockey player.
Yeah, I don't think you're far off there. Kind of every single one of those attributes he embodies on the ice and off the ice too. So, yeah, I think you're right on, dead on.
So they've got that taken care of. Maybe at the perfect time, a bit of a distraction after what's happened the last couple of games puts Noah Hanifin at ease. If he wants to now get a house before the end of the season, like he knows where he's going to be for the next 8 years. He can buy the house that he wants or shop for the where he's going to be when he comes back in the fall. He doesn't have to wait for free agency and then go through that. And there's nothing wrong with going through free agency, and people do really well through unrestricted free agency. But he can really put everything to the side, knowing where he's going to be and focus on hockey. I think that is a great thing for Noah Hanifin, the player, and also an added bonus for the hockey club, knowing that that his mind is going to be free of any kind of thoughts of wondering or speculating where he's going to be. Vegas finished up that three-game road trip, which really was an eight-game road trip because there was one stop in Vegas in between. So it was eight games in eight different cities, and they go 4-3-1 in the eight games. I'm trying to look at this in a big-picture scenario. They were rocking it out of the gate by winning those overtime games before the one game back home at T-Mobile Arena. And then they had the troublesome third period against the Arizona Coyotes, dropped a close one against Vancouver, and weren't as competitive as they would have liked last night against the Edmonton Oilers. So when you look at it like that, how do you evaluate the eight games?
Well, I mean, there's certainly some good and some bad, right? Obviously, you loved what you saw on that four-game road trip where the Golden Knights were able to take points from the St. Louis Blues, the Minnesota Wild. They were able to go up to Winnipeg and have a really strong third period after, you know, a third period goes in the wrong direction against the Nashville Predators, but you take points in all of those games. That's fantastic. You come home, it's a solid performance against Vancouver. You start to really feel like the Golden Knights have their mojo back. And then, you know, the Arizona game gets away. There's not as much urgency as I'd like to see against Vancouver. And then last night was really, from an urgency perspective, just not there at all for the Golden Knights. So, I mean, obviously it started off well. They've taken a couple of steps back over the last couple of games, and I'm just hopeful that, you know, as you go into these final four home games of the regular season, that they're able to find or like rediscover the aspect of their game that allowed them to take points on the initial four games on this road trip. That, to me, is where I'm looking for the Golden Knights, just to get back to where they were over those four games.
They took advantage of situations at the start of the road trip, and they didn't at the end of it. Which is how valuable the performance was to kick off the journey, and the end of it is disappointing. Now, the Arizona game, I will just put up to like a one-off fluke. You may not see it again, and when you do see it again, it's going to be in, we hope it'll be in a long time, but something like that, the third period against the Coyotes was just so outside the performance of this team from a history basis. I didn't mind the Vancouver game. I know we both, you and I, would have liked more presence offensively.
Yeah.
I think we have to give some credit to Vancouver there. They certainly would have liked that. They were a team that hasn't been going great either, and they needed that win, especially, they followed it up with a loss to Arizona too. So maybe it's Arizona doing the good things because they've upset a couple of good teams lately. But the Vancouver game, the way they defended in the Vancouver game, especially 5-on-5, was encouraging, which is what made last night more surprising. Because I thought there would be, from the third period in Vancouver, where it was goalless for both teams, I thought showed some really good promise for the Edmonton game. And then you allow a fluky goal in the first, and then it just went south. And it was almost like, okay, we're at the end of the road trip. Not saying anybody ever quits. I'm not, absolutely not saying that. But there is a natural, like, okay, let's just get home and let's recoup here and get back to it. So as that game went along, it just had those feelings of end of a road trip. Let's get out of here and just march along. So there was a couple of games where I thought they were suspect, but I thought they actually played better or performed better than 4-3-1 did, because they were in the Vancouver game and they were able to also take advantage of what happened. And two of their losses were just third period that got away. So it could have been, it was that close to spectacular. And in the end, it ends up slightly better than 500, but more closer to average.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess if you're looking at it, you find ways to win early on in the road trip, and you weren't able to find ways to win later on, right? Like you weren't able to make that next play or find that next goal against the Vancouver Canucks, and it cost you an opportunity at 2 points. You look at the Nashville game, you're not able to kind of stop the bleeding in the third period there. You get a point out of it, but you don't get two. And then, you know, obviously the Arizona game, that's another one where you should be in complete control. You were in complete control of the third period, and then kind of the wheels fall off. But, you know, you kind of go through those three games specifically, and you get all three of them. All of a sudden, you're talking about 7-1, and you're feeling pretty good about where you're at right now.
Yeah, they were close enough to go in that direction.
Sure.
Maybe it's the evening out of the bounces. I don't know. Let's slide into a break, and we'll get back to it with John Shannon. He's got some news regarding the chase of Austin Matthews, looking at 70 goals, and we'll also pick his brain, the reaction in the hockey world to the Noah Hanifin deal, as well as the Turtle Derby that is the Eastern Conference playoff race, trying to lock down the final couple of positions out there. It's the VGK Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Hello, Canada and hockey fans in the United States and Newfoundland.
On the ice at Madison Square Garden, New York meets Montreal in the world's fastest game.
It is officially on. A nice, gentle game full of battered shins, cracked skulls, broken arms, tangled legs, and nosedives.
He used to have the most important job in Canada. Now he's willing to give us a few minutes. It's time to chat with John Shannon.
News broke earlier today that Noah Hanifin's contract has been extended by 8 years with the Vegas Golden Knights. He will pass up unrestricted free agency. Here is John Shannon. What's the hockey world's reaction to the extension announcement?
Well, I don't think anybody's surprised. I think that, you know, when Vegas makes a trade and they try to put a guy in a really positive situation, Kelly McCrimmon gets the job done, period, end of story. You know, I think there's a lot to be said with relationships, obviously one between the club and Noah and his people. But at the same time, I think there's a lot to be said with the relationship with guys like Jack Eichel and Noah Hanifin. That and no state taxes make Vegas pretty attractive, Darren.
You don't have to tell me that, and if anybody is questioning that, just look at the advantageous position that Tomas Hertl is in, coming over from California to Nevada over the next 6 years. It does add a significant amount of money to the contract. Let's slide over to from Vegas some other league news. We have the Flyers, the Red Wings, the Penguins, the Islanders all in action tonight. Do you have a gut feeling on who's going to get in the East?
The only one I have a gut on is Philadelphia is done like dinner. You know, I do think that the Flyers are going to have a difficult time getting back into the race, even though they're, you know, theoretically only a point out. They are leading the Rangers 1-0 right now, but it's early in the first. To me, that was a team that, quite frankly, has overachieved so much. And, you know, they thought they had a 76-game schedule, not an 82-game schedule. So that's the only one. Detroit's got a big game tonight in Pittsburgh. That's obviously key. And yet you do have to think that Washington, with a pretty easy schedule, has a better chance than others. And the other thing is, let's face it, teams in the Metro have two opportunities to get in, either as Metro number 3 and the wild card, whereas Detroit, the only team from the Atlantic that's in this race, has the only chance to get in as a wild card.
Want to get Ryan in here, but just one more on the Flyers. Do you think they collapse down the stretch affects John Tortorella's future? Because it would be kind of unfair if it did. I'm not saying it won't, but it's unfair because he did have that team overachieving for so much of the year.
I don't think so. I think the one thing that has been consistent since John got there is his relationship with management. And now that it's a new management, I think it's consistent with Keith Jones and Danny Briere. I also think that he has a tremendous relationship with the corporation, Comcast, and the president of Comcast Sports, and that's Dan Hilferty. If you remember, Darren, he was the guy that claimed that they would pay the fine for Tortorella when he refused to leave the bench in Tampa.
Right.
So I think that John Tortorella will be the coach of the team as long as he wants. And then at a certain point, he will go into a senior management position inside the Flyers organization as a reward.
Great stuff. The John Shannon's with us on the VGK Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
You know, John, I agree with you when it comes to the Philadelphia Flyers, but when you look at the Islanders right now, they're on a five-game win streak. Does that not hold as much cachet with you kind of when you're assessing where these things are going with those final two spots? Because it feels like at least the Islanders are pushing in the right direction here.
Well, here's the thing, Ryan. You know, and I have a bias, like a few people in Vegas have a bias. But I have a bias. I really like Lou Lamoriello. I think he's been great for the game. I think he's been supportive of people. If you have a player that has played on a Lou Lamoriello team, they can't say enough about Lou. Lou builds a team a certain way, and I think he has built a hockey team that is ready for the playoffs. And I think that what you've seen in this five-game streak is a team that can play playoff hockey already. The fascination for me on Long Island, I almost said in Long Island, but it's on Long Island, the most fascinating thing for me is that their best goalie has been psyched out by their coach. And so Sorokin has lost his number one position to Semyon Varlamov, and Sorokin has had a difficult time getting back in the net, and there's something not symbiotic between Patrick Waugh and Ilya Sorokin right now that has affected his goaltending and that relationship.
Because
but when you
Waugh
look at the way that
legend.
Team plays, when they're healthy with Pulak and Pelech, with Casey Cizikas, Matt Barzell, Bo Horvat, they're a team I think that's built for the playoffs. And I for one, I'm not sure I'd want to play them in the first round because I may beat them, but it's going to take me a long time. And I'm going to be banged and bruised by the time I finish that series.
Yeah. So you think Waugh as a legend is intimidating Sorokin?
Totally. Totally. I really do. I think it's a mind game between two great goaltenders.
Why would it be that way?
Well, I mean, you know Patrick, Darren. You've met Patrick. Patrick can be an intimidating guy. He can turn and look at you and wink at you or nod at you, and you go, holy smokes, this guy, he's got leadership. He's something there. Patrick Waugh speaks his mind. I'm not saying it's malicious at all. I'm not saying that. I am saying that, you know, when you are a great athlete at a certain position, your patience for people that play that position may not be as long as you expect, and there might be an intimidation factor due to that. There really might be. But listen, Sorokin played much better with Lane Lambert as the coach than he has with Patrick Waugh as the coach.
Yeah, you're right. Just on the Waugh factor, he was coaching the Quebec Ramparts, who he owned a first Memorial Cup that he won as a coach. He was second that he was in. He was in the final against the Moncton Wildcats, and before the opening faceoff, the lights are down, pregame festivities are going on. He walked across the ice and stood right in front of the Moncton bench and looked at Ted Nolan, who was coaching the Moncton Wildcats, and said a couple of things. I couldn't hear what he was uttering, but and he may not have been saying anything, but it was the ultimate intimidation that we are going to, and it was in Moncton. He diffused any type of home value on that bench because he just stood right in front of the Moncton Wildcats and then went to his bench. It was one of the greatest feats that I've ever seen of one person against a team, and that goes to exactly what John Shannon said.
You know, he is, for want of a better phrase, he's hockey royalty. Mm-hmm. He is hockey royalty. You know, and hence, with that comes an aura. And Patrick Waugh has always had an aura, even when he played. he had an aura. I mean, this was a guy that when they asked him to play for Canada in the 1998 Olympic Winter Games in Nagano, Japan, he said, "I will play, but only if you promise me I play every game." And they were so intimidated, they said yes.
You're right. You should have agreed, though. They should have agreed saying only if Dominik Hasek doesn't play every game.
But Dominik Hasek did play every game.
Needed to get rid of that guy, him out of that more than anything. Hey, Arizona, what do you know? And tell us the short-term future here of that franchise as it relates to Salt Lake City.
Well, here's, you know, the guys have done some really good reporting in the last, you know, 48 hours about it. But here's what I have been told and been told over the last month or so. The agreement between ownership in Arizona and the National Hockey League was they were going to be allowed to stay in Mullet Arena for 3 years. That was going to be the maximum. So this is the end of year two. And with no arena in sight, new location in sight, there's an auction that's supposed to happen at the end of June. But then, you know, you haven't even put a shovel in the ground, and now you're getting mayors of suburban areas in Phoenix saying, "We don't want you here." They're 5 years away from having an arena in Phoenix for hockey. It just makes no sense. So do I think they're moving next week? Maybe not. Do I think if they don't move this year, they move next year? Yes, I do. So I think that they have been given a timetable, and I think now, and the other thing to put in place is there's a ton of pressure, I'm sure. I can't confirm this because the executive board, the people that work around Gary Bettman, are very tight-lipped, but there are 9 owners on that executive committee that I'm sure are saying, "We're tired of carrying this water. We don't want to be carrying the debt of the Arizona Coyotes anymore. Let's get something done." And the obvious thing is they have interest in Salt Lake. They have infrastructure in Salt Lake. They have an owner that has deep pockets in Salt Lake. Then let's try to do something as soon as we can.
Just an observation, and Ryan, you follow up, but when Ryan Smith, the prospective owner in Salt Lake City, comes out this week and says, "What should we name the team?" He's not doing that without getting some kind of clearance from the National Hockey League, a little wink or a nudge. And that tells me they're going to end up in Salt Lake City next year. That's me reading the tea leaves, Ryan.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of unfortunate when you start to think about the Arizona Coyotes, because we're looking at a player in Austin Matthews who benefited from hockey being in Arizona and scored his 67th goal so far this season. Like, when you think about kind of what the Coyotes have done in terms of building out that grassroots game and what it's kind of led to here with Austin Matthews on the cusp of a 70 goal season, makes you understand why this market is so important to the National Hockey League.
Well, two things, Ryan. I understand your logic, but based on that, there'd be a team in Guelph, Ontario, where George McPhee's from. Because there have been 50 guys from Guelph that have come to the National Hockey League. You know, so, and Austin Matthews coming from Arizona, great. But the other thing is that, and this is where the people in Vegas have to sit up a little bit. The people in Vegas have seen great hockey for six seasons. When do you think the last year that people in Phoenix saw great hockey? I'm going to tell you it's been over a decade. Mm-hmm. One of the key reasons all of the issues that are going on in Arizona is the hockey team has not performed well on the ice. And give the fans credit in Arizona for not going to watch bad hockey. And that's because I've always been a believer in the Phoenix area, the city as a franchise city. But you cannot continually shovel bad hockey at them and expect them to show up. That's been one of the biggest issues in the history of this franchise since it moved from Winnipeg in 1996.
John Shannon chatting with us on the VGK Insider Show. He is our NHL insider as we hand things off to Chris Chapman for a question.
Yeah,
Chris.
Hey, John. So right now, the Salt Lake market is part of Bill Foley's television footprint and Boise, Idaho, and some big cities in Montana. So obviously, Bill Foley's going to lose the Salt Lake market and maybe some of those other markets as well. So will the league compensate him for that? And what happens to the Phoenix market? Does that just become absorbed by Vegas, or is there going to be a fight between them and maybe Colorado and Salt Lake to get that market?
Well, these are the key questions that the commissioner has sitting on his desk every day. And if there's a swap, so you, Chris, you have probably made the most obvious swap to say. And here's the other thing. Scripps, who Darren does games for in Vegas on the Scripps Sports system, Scripps also does games in Phoenix. So it would be easy to do the TV swap there and have Scripps games into Phoenix. But if you said, well, we're gonna take Salt Lake and Idaho and Montana away from you, I think Mr. Foley would be angry about Montana, something tells me. Mm-hmm. But we are going to give you Arizona. That's a pretty fair swap. And that's really what happens. It almost becomes a game of Monopoly. For the commissioner to deal with, in TV terms in the hockey world, it's called the outer market. Because the inner market is 50 miles from your arena. The outer market is that residual area that you're talking about in northern Nevada, in Utah, and Montana and Idaho. So from that perspective, there would probably be some horse trading made and try not to compensate the Golden Knights with any dollars in that situation. Heck, if you lost Salt Lake and gained Phoenix, you're probably gaining a larger TV market anyway. So it might be advantageous for the Golden Knights to do that if it does happen, whether it's this year or next.
So you don't think they necessarily move next year?
But the only reason I say that is that Gary Bettman did give Morello a 3-year window. And the challenge becomes this land auction at the end of June. And do you wait until the end of June? Now, I don't think, in my opinion, I don't think that the commissioner wants the distraction of Arizona discussions all through the playoffs. I don't think he does. So he either does it right at the end of the regular season, and really there's a very small window, because I think Arizona's last game is on the 17th and the playoffs start on the 20th, so there's a small window there to do something, or then they have to wait. And so I think you know Gary well enough, and I think I know Gary well enough to know that he's already decided. He just hasn't told us when.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you on that. How's life? You good?
Me? Living the dream. You know, I watched, it was a really rainy day here in southern Ontario, so it was a great day to justify to sit down and watch the Masters all day.
That's awesome. You're talking to a golf nut, but you're also speaking to a couple of guys who don't have any interest in the game. It's one of my big frustrations with Chapman and Wallace.
It's funny you say that. So as one of the little hobbies I have, I teach at a broadcast school here in Toronto a couple days a week. The assignment this week was to build a one-hour special on as a Masters preview yesterday. And the kids, a class of 22 kids, 19 didn't know very much about golf. But by the time we finished the one-hour special, 18 of those 19 people said, I am going to watch now because this sounds like a really cool thing. And as every year happens, the Masters never disappoints. You love Amen Corner. You love the walk-up 18. It is the coolest thing. You love the $1.50 pimento and cheese sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the grocery store this morning and bought some pimento and some cream cheese and made a sandwich to eat during the tournament. So I felt at home right here on the, and I only charged myself $5 for a beer, which is what they charge on the grounds at Augusta National.
That 18 tee shot, I don't know how people get it through that chute out to the fairway.
Well, so I usually keep it in my pocket and walk it up. So.
Good for you. Well, you played Augusta National 3 or 4 times, broken par twice. Yeah.
You know, I had a chance to go and stay at a cabin on the 11th about 20 years ago, and I said, no, I'm busy with hockey playoffs, and I have never been invited back since. I'm kicking myself.
Goodness. The assignment to Chapman and Wallace is in place. You guys,
yeah.
Do you accept?
I think, and even just take 2 hours on Sunday, Chris and Ryan, and just open your eyes and watch for 2 hours, and you will feel the aura of Augusta National come through your television. By the way, since I've been talking here in the last 40 seconds, there's been 2 goals in the Detroit-Pittsburgh game. It's now 2-2. With 12 seconds to go in the first period.
Imagine if that thing went to overtime. It'd go 15 periods. Because nobody wants to win it.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. Playoff races are great this year. That's for sure.
All right, we got to go.
Hey, I just want to say hello to my pal, George McPhee. Hello, George. Hope you're well.
He is well. He signed a defenseman to a big contract today. Things are great in VGK land, trying to lock up the playoffs in the next couple of days. There's John Shannon. Thanks, buddy. Have a great weekend. We'll be back with more of the VGK Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas.